John was stunned. Robert Baratheon had looked old and fat when he visited Winterfell, yet he seemed hale enough, and there had been no talk of illness. How can you know? One of the guards, Overeer Clydes, regained the letter to Maester Aemon. Pip leaned close. John, I'm sorry. He was your father's friend, wasn't he?
They were as close as brothers once. John wondered if Joffrey would keep his father as the king's hand. It did not seem likely. That might mean Lord Eddard would return to Winterfell, and his sisters as well. He might even be allowed to visit them with Lord Mormont's permission. It would be good to see Arya's grin again and to talk with his father.
I will ask him about my mother, he resolved. I'm a man now. It's past time, he told me. Even if she was a whore, I don't care. I want to know.
I heard Ake say the dead men were your uncles, Pip said.
Yes, John replied. Two of the six he took with him. They've been dead a long time, only the bodies are queer.
Queer?
Pip was all curiosity.
How queer?
Sam will tell you. John did not want to talk of it. I should see if the old bear has need of me. He walked to the Lord Commander's tower alone with a curious sense of apprehension. The brothers on guard eyed him solemnly as he approached.
The old bear's in his solar, one of them announced. He was asking for you.
John nodded. He should have come straight from the stable. He climbed the tower steps briskly. He wants wine, or a fire in his hearth, that's all, he told himself. When he entered the solar, Mormont's raven screamed at him.
Corn!
The bird shrieked.
Corn! 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 Don't you believe it, I just fed him, the old bear growled.
He was seated by the window, reading a letter.
Bring me a cup of wine and pour one for yourself.
For myself, my lord. Mormont lifted his eyes from the letter to stare at John. There was pity in that look. He could taste it.
You heard me.
John poured with exaggerated care, vaguely aware that he was drawing out the act. When the cups were filled, he would have no choice but to face whatever was in that letter. Yet all too soon, they were filled.
Sit, boy, Mormont commanded him. Drink.
John remained standing. It's my father, isn't it? The old bear tapped the letter with a finger.
Your father and the king, he rumbled. I won't lie to you. It's grievous news. I never thought to see another king, not at my age, with Robert half my years and strong as a bull.
He took a gulp of wine.
They say the king loved to hunt. The things we love destroy us every time, lad. Remember that. My son loved that young wife of his, vain woman. If not for her, he would never have thought to sell those poachers.
John could scarcely follow what he was saying. My lord, I don't understand what's happened to my father.
I told you to sit, Mormont grumbled.
Sit,
the raven screeched.
Have a drink, damn you. That's a command, Snow.
John sat and took a sip of wine.
Lord Eddard has been imprisoned. He's charged with treason. It is said he plotted with Robert's brothers to deny the throne to Prince Joffrey.
No, John said at once, that couldn't be. My father would never betray the king.
Be that as it may, said Mormont. It's not for me to say, nor for you.
But it's a lie, John insisted. How could they think his father was a traitor? Had they all gone mad?
Lord Eddard Stark would never dishonor himself.
Would he?
He fathered a bastard, a small voice whispered inside him. Where was the honor in that? And your mother? What of her? He will not even speak her name.
My lord, what will happen to him? Will they kill him? Well, as to that, I cannot say, lad. I mean to send a letter. I knew some of the king's counselors in my youth. Old Pycelle, Lord Stannis, Sir Barristan. Whatever your father has done, or hasn't done, he is a great lord. He must be allowed to take the black and join his heir. Gods know we need men of Lord Eddard's ability. John knew that other men accused of treason had been allowed to redeem their honour on the wall in days past. Why not Lord Eddard, his father here? That was a strange thought, and strangely uncomfortable. It would be a monstrous injustice to strip him of Winterfell and force him to take the black. And yet, if it meant his life, and would Joffrey allow it? He remembered the prince at Winterfell, the way he'd mocked Rob and Sir Roderick in the yard. John himself he had scarcely even noticed. Bastards were beneath even his contempt. My lord, will the king listen to you? Bilbear shrugged.
A boy king. I imagine he listened to his mother. Pity the dwarf isn't with him. He's the lad's uncle, and he saw our need when he visited us. It was a bad thing. Your lady mother taking him captive.
Lady Stark is not my mother, John reminded him sharply. Tyrion Lannister had been a friend to him. If Lord Eddard was killed, she would be as much to blame as a queen. My lord, what of my sisters, Arya and Sansa? They were with my father. Do you know?
Pycelle makes no mention of them, but Dr. Selby treated gently. I will ask about them when I write.
Mormont shook his head.
This could not have happened at a worse time, if ever the realm needed a strong king. There are dark days and cold nights ahead. I feel it in my bones.
He gave John a long, shrewd look.
I hope you're not thinking of doing anything stupid, boy.
He's my father, John wanted to say, but he knew that Mormont would not want to hear it. His throat was dry. He made himself take another sip of wine.
Your duty is here now, the Lord Commander reminded him. Your old life ended when you took the black.
His bird made a raucous echo.
Black!
Mormont took no notice.
Whatever they do in King's Landing is none of our concern.
When John did not answer, the old man finished his wine and said,
You're free to go. I'll have no further need of you today. On the morrow, you can help me write that letter.
John did not remember standing or leaving the solar. The next he knew, he was descending the tower steps thinking, This is my father, my sisters. How can it be none of my concern? Outside, one of the guards looked at him and said,
Be strong, boy. The guards are cruel.
They know, John realized.
My father is no traitor, he said hoarsely.
Even the words stuck in his throat as if to choke him. The wind was rising, and it seemed colder in the yard than it had when he'd gone in. Spirit summer was drawing to an end. The rest of the afternoon passed as if in a dream. John could not have said where he walked, what he did, who he spoke with. Ghost was with him. He knew that much. The silent presence of the dire wolf gave him comfort. The girls do not even have that much, he thought. Their walls might have kept them safe. But Lady is dead, and Nymeria is lost. They're all alone. A north wind had begun to blow by the time the sun went down. John could hear it skirling against the wall and over the icy battlements as he went to the common hall for the evening meal. Hob had cooked up a venison stew, thick with barley, onions, and carrots. When he spooned an extra portion onto John's plate and gave him the crusty heel of the bread, he knew what it meant. He knows. He looked around the hall, saw heads turned quickly, eyes politely averted. They all know. His friends rallied to him.
We asked the Septon to light a candle for your father,
Mather told him.
It's a lie. We all know it's a lie. Even Gren knows it's a lie,
Pip chimed in. Gren nodded, and Sam clasped John's hand.
You're my brother now, so he's my father too, the fat boy said. If you want to go out to the weirwoods and pray to the old gods, I'll go with you.
The weirwoods were beyond the wall, yet he knew Sam meant what he said. They are my brothers, he thought, as much as Rob and Bran and Rickon. And then he heard the laughter, sharp and cruel as a whip, and the voice of Sir Alistair Thorne.
Not only a bastard, but a traitor's bastard,
he was telling the men around him. In the blink of an eye, John had vaulted onto the table, dagger in his hand. Pip made a grab for him, but he wrenched his leg away, and then he was sprinting down the table and kicking the bowl from Sir Alice's hand. Stew went flying everywhere, spattering the brothers. Thorne recoiled. People were shouting, but John Snow did not hear them. He lunged at Sir Alice's face with a dagger, slashing at those cold onyx eyes. But Sam threw himself between them, and before John could get around him, Pip was on his back, clinging like a monkey, and Gren was grabbing his arm while Toad wrenched the knife from his fingers.
Later, much later, after they had marched him back to his sleeping cell, Mormont came down to see him, Raven on his shoulder.
"I told you not to do anything stupid, boy," the old bear said.
"Oi!"
the bird chorused. Mormont shook his head, disgusted.
"And to think I had high hopes for you."
They took his knife and his sword and told him he was not to leave his cell until the high officers met to decide what was to be done with him. And then they placed a guard outside his door to make certain he obeyed. His friends were not allowed to see him, but the old bear did relent and permit him ghost, so he was not utterly alone.
"My father is no traitor,"
he told the dire wolf when the rest had gone. Ghost looked at him in silence. John slumped against the wall, hands around his knees, and stared at the candle on the table beside his narrow bed. The flame flickered and swayed. The shadows moved around him. The room seemed to grow darker and colder. "I will not sleep tonight," John thought. Yet he must have dozed. When he woke, his legs were stiff and cramped, and the candle had long since burned out. Ghost stood on his hind legs, scrabbling at the door. John was startled to see how tall he'd grown. "Ghost, what is it?" he called softly. The direwolf turned his head and looked down at him, baring his fangs in a silent snarl. "Has he gone mad?" John wondered. "It's me, Ghost," he murmured, trying not to sound afraid. Yet he was trembling violently. When had it gotten so cold? Ghost backed away from the door. There were deep gouges where he'd raked the wood. John watched him with mounting disquiet. "There's someone out there, isn't there?" he whispered. Crouching, the dire wolf crept backward, white fur rising on the back of his neck. "The guard," he thought. "They left a man to guard my door. Ghost smells him through the door. That's all it is." Slowly, John pushed himself to his feet. He was shivering, uncontrollably, wishing he still had a sword. Three quick steps brought him to the door. He grabbed the handle and pulled it inward. The creak of the hinges almost made him jump. His guard was sprawled bonelessly across the narrow steps, looking up at him. Looking up at him, even though he was lying on his stomach. His head had been twisted completely around.
"It can't be," John told himself. "This is the Lord Commander's tower. It's guarded day and night. This couldn't happen. It's a dream. I'm having a nightmare."
Ghost slid past him out of the door. The wolf started up the steps, stopped, looked back at John. That was when he heard it. The soft scrape of a boot on stone. The sound of a latch turning. The sounds came from above, from the Lord Commander's chambers. A nightmare this might be, yet it was no dream. The guard's sword was in its sheath. John knelt and worked it free. The heft of steel in his fist made him bolder. He moved up the steps, Ghost padding silently before him. Shadows lurked in every turn of the stair. John crept up warily, probing any suspicious darkness with the point of his sword. Suddenly, he heard the shriek of Mormont's raven.
"Gorn!"
the bird was screaming.
"Gorn! Gorn! 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 Gorn!"
Ghost bounded ahead, and John came scrambling after. The door to Mormont's solo was wide open. The direwolf plunged through. John stopped in the doorway, blade in hand, giving his eyes a moment to adjust. Heavy drapes had been pulled across the windows, and the darkness was black as ink. "Who's there?" he called out. Then he saw it, a shadow in the shadows, sliding towards the inner door that led to Mormont's sleeping cell. A man shape, all in black, cloaked and hooded. But beneath the hood, the eyes shone with an icy blue radiance. Ghost leapt. Man and wolf went down together, with neither scream nor snarl, rolling, smashing into a chair, knocking over a table laden with papers. Mormont's raven was flapping overhead, screaming, "Gorn! Gorn! Gorn! Gorn!" John felt as blind as Maester Aemon. Keeping the wall to his back, he slid toward the window and ripped down the curtain. Moonlight flooded the solar. He glimpsed black hands buried in white fur, swollen dark fingers tightening around his direwolf's throat. Ghost was twisting and snapping, legs flailing in the air, but he could not break free. John had no time to be afraid. He threw himself forward, shouting, bringing down the longsword with all his weight behind it. Steel sheared through sleeve and skin and bone. Yet the sound was wrong somehow. The smell that engulfed him was so queer and cold he almost gagged. He saw arm and hand on the floor, black fingers wriggling in a pool of moonlight. Ghost wrenched free from the other hand and crept away, red tongue lolling from his mouth. The hooded man lifted his pale moon face, and John slashed at it without hesitation. The sword laid the intruder open to the bone, taking off half his nose and opening a gash cheek to cheek under those eyes. Eyes, eyes, like blue stars burning. John knew that face. Arthur, he thought, reeling back. Gods, he's dead, I saw him dead. He felt something scrabble at his ankle. Black fingers clawed at his calf. The arm was crawling up his leg, ripping at wool and flesh. Shouting with revulsion, John pried the fingers off his leg with the point of his sword and flipped the thing away. It lay writhing, fingers opening and closing. The corpse lurched forward. There was no blood. One-armed, face cut near in half, it seemed to feel nothing. John held the longsword before him. "Stay away!" he commanded, his voice gone shrill. "Gorn!" screamed the raven. "Gorn! Gorn!" The severed arm was wriggling out of its torn sleeve, a pale snake with black, five-fingered head. Ghost pounced and got it between his teeth. Finger bones crunched. John hacked at the corpse's neck, felt the steel bite deep and hard. Dead Arthur slammed into him, knocking him off his feet. John's breath went out of him as the fallen table caught him between his shoulder blades. The sword! Where was the sword? He'd lost the damn sword! When he opened his mouth to scream, the white jammed its black corpse fingers into John's mouth. Gagging, he tried to shove it off, but the dead man was too heavy, its hand forcing itself farther down his throat, icy cold choking him. Its face was against his own, filling the world. Frost covered its eyes, sparkling blue. John raked cold flesh with his nails and kicked at the thing's legs. He tried to bite, tried to punch, tried to breathe. And suddenly, the corpse's weight was gone. Its fingers ripped from his throat. It was all John could do to roll over, retching and shaking. Ghost had it again. He watched as the direwolf buried his teeth in the white's gut and began to rip and tear. He watched, only half conscious, for a long moment, before he finally remembered to look for his sword. And saw Lord Mormont, naked and groggy from sleep, standing in the doorway with an oil lamp in his hand. Gnawed and fingerless, the arm thrashed on the floor, wriggling toward him. John tried to shout, but his voice was gone. Staggering to his feet, he kicked the arm away and snatched the lamp from the old bear's fingers. The flame flickered and almost died.
"Burn!"
the raven called.
"Burn! Burn! Burn!"
Spinning, John saw the drapes he'd ripped from the window. He flung the lamp into the puddled cloth with both hands. Metal crunched, glass shattered, oil spewed, and the hangings went up in a great whoosh of flame. The heat of it on his face was sweeter than any kiss John had ever known.
"Ghost!" he shouted.
The direwolf wrenched free and came to him as the white struggled to rise, dark snakes spilling from the great wound in its belly. John plunged his hand into the flames, grabbed a fistful of the burning drapes, and whipped them at the dead man.
"Let it burn," he prayed, as the cloth smothered the corpse. "Gods, please, please, let it burn."
Bran. The Karstarks came in on a cold, windy morning, bringing 300 horsemen and near 2,000 foot from their castle at Carhold. The steel points of their pikes winked in the pale sunlight as the column approached. A man went before them, pounding out a slow, deep-throated marching rhythm on a drum that was bigger than he was. Boom, boom, boom. Bran watched them come from a guard turret atop the outer wall, peering through Maester Lewin's bronze fire-eye while perched on Hoda's shoulders. Lord Rickard himself led them, his sons, Harion and Eddard and Torren, riding beside him beneath night-black banners emblazoned with the white sunburst of their hearts. Old Nan said they had Stark blood in them, going back hundreds of years, but they did not look like Starks to Bran. They were big men and fierce, faces covered with thick beards, hair worn loose past the shoulders. Their cloaks were made of skins, the pelts of bear and seal and wolf. They were the last, he knew. The other lords were already here, with their hosts. Bran yearned to ride out among them, to see the winter houses full to bursting, the jostling crowds in the market square every morning, the streets rutted and torn by wheel and hoof. But Rob had forbidden him to leave the castle. "We have no men to spare to guard you," his brother had explained.
"I'll take Summer," Bran argued.
"Don't act the boy with me, Bran," Rob said. "You know better than that. Only 2 days ago, one of Lord Bolton's men knifed one of Lord Serwyn's at the Smoking Log."
"Our Lady Mother would skin me for a pelt if I let you put yourself at risk."
He was using the voice of Rob the Lord when he said it. Bran knew that meant there was no appeal. It was because of what had happened in the Wolf's Wood, he knew. The memory still gave him bad dreams. He had been as helpless as a baby, no more able to defend himself than Rickon would have been, less even. Rickon would have kicked them, at the least. It shamed him. He was only a few years younger than Rob. If his brother was almost a man grown, so was he. He should have been able to protect himself. A year ago, before, he would have visited the town even if it meant climbing over the walls by himself. In those days, he could run downstairs, get on and off his pony by himself, and wield a wooden sword good enough to knock Prince Tommen in the dirt. Now he could only watch, peering out through Maester Lewin's lens tube. The Maester had taught him all the banners, the male fist of the Glovers, silver on scarlet, Lady Mormont's black bear, the hideous flayed man that went before Roose Bolton of the Dreadfort, a bull moose for the Hornwoods, a battle axe for the Serwyns, 3 sentinel trees for the Tallhearts, and the fearsome sigil of the House Umber, a roaring giant in shattered chains. And soon enough he learned their faces, too, when the lords and their sons and knights retainer came to Winterfell to feast.